I think from a St Andrews experience, there's something that you can't replicate, and it might be everything to do with golf or something to do with golf, but when people come here, you've got grown men standing in the first tee in tears because that emotional experience of just being where the greats of the game have been before. You've got people like of greats of the game, like Jack Nicklaus, saying your career isn't complete unless you've won an Open. So there is something truly unique about the town, and it's very difficult to describe it.
Welcome to Golf Yourself Healthy, the community of golfers who are unified in their belief that golf is good for you. I'm your host, Chris Lynch. Join me and invited guests as we share stories around how golf is helping us to live happy, healthy, and fulfilled lives. If you'd like to join our community, why not follow us on your podcast platform of choice and be notified of new episodes as soon as they're released. Please also check out our back catalogue of previous podcast episodes and journal articles at golfyourselfhealthy.com. We have a special episode in store for you today in this, our first episode of Season 2 of the GYH podcast. This episode comes to you from the home of golf, St Andrews, where I had the immense pleasure and joy of interviewing Scott Semple, Director of People at the St Andrews Links Trust. Whilst many of you will know St Andrews being the home of golf, you may not be so familiar with the fact that the St Andrews Links Trust is a charitable organisation which controls and manages all six of the golf courses on site, including the Old Course itself, one of the most iconic and famous golf courses in the world. In Scott's company, I had the pleasure of playing the Eden course on our visit, with Scott having the audacity of sinking a birdie putt on the 18th hole to claim a hard-fought victory in our match. In this conversation, we talk about a range of golf-related topics spanning diversity and inclusion, well-being, customer experience, right through to the unique position of influence which St Andrews Links holds within golf. You'll tell from listening to Scott that he is mightily passionate about his role, one he considers as somewhat of a dream job. Moreover, Scott's love of golf and how he believes the game to be good for him is a captivating listen. Without any further ado, let's tee off and jump into the conversation. Scott Semple, welcome to the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast.
Good, thanks, Chris, and welcome to the home of golf.
Thank you very much. I feel right at home here. I tell you what, this is a heck of a facility you've got here. It's just, even just this nice latte that I'm drinking with the St Andrews Links logo on it. No stone left unturned here. Nice touches everywhere you look. But I think the logical starting point for the conversation, Scott, would probably be talking about your role, first of all, here at the St Andrews Links Trust. So you're the Director of People here. I, as a fellow HR practitioner, know what that means, but my listeners may not know. So in simple terms, what do you do here at St Andrews Links Trust?
Yeah, well, there's a lot going on. My role predominantly focuses in and around the employee experience and making that as positive and as engaging an experience as it can be, with it. The concept being that if we have our employees on top of their game, the best that they can be, enjoying what they do and who they do it with and who they do it for, we are very proud of what we offer here at the home of golf, and very much focused on making sure that we create unique and memorable experiences for all our customers, whether that's the local ticket holder to the overseas golfer that's coming for their bucket list dream golf trip, and everybody else in between. And for us, it's important that if we get that employee experience right, we think that experience of the customer then takes care of itself. So a lot of the work me and my team do is around trying to shape that employee experience that isn't a one-size-fits-all for everybody. Try and tailor that to make it a personal experience whereby, regardless of where you work within the trust and the role that you perform and the skills and experience that you bring to the organisation, that experience, whether you're here with us for 3 months, as some people are, because they come and work for us over the season, or they're here for 3 years or 3 decades, however long you're with us, we want you to have a good time, enjoy that experience, and bring and be able to showcase what it is you've got by way of your skills, experience and knowledge, and apply that so that the customer, in terms of that memorable and unique experience, kind of they themselves experience that. So a lot of what me and the team do is very much focused on that employee experience. So everything from the day-to-day stuff, as you can imagine, that happens in any workplace, and looking, you know, beyond that to kind of talent retention and acquisition, to things like sort of pay and reward, equity, diversity, inclusion, and well-being, which is a big area for us to be focused on, and bringing all of those things together. And we think if we get all of those things right, we've got a really good chance of delivering that fantastic employee experience. So that's very much where, not just my role, but my team, people team here, that's where we're very much focused on in terms of looking after that employee experience.
Yeah, well, we've been doing a fair bit of chatting before we've kind of hit the record button, but actually I haven't asked you then, so what size is your people team?
So I would say it's a small team, and others would say it was a big team based on the headcount we've got. So the headcount of employees in the high season kind of comes in anything between kind of 400 to 450. And the people team itself, now we're seven strong, I would say, and that's kind of grown in the last couple of years since I joined the organisation. And again, that's just reacting and emerging from the kind of impact that the pandemic had. And that certainly was before I joined, but it did have an impact across the organisation. It had an impact within the people team. So from that, again, emerging from the pandemic and understanding how the workplace has and hasn't changed, and looking for where we need some expertise and capacity to add to what was already here. So yeah, we've grown to a team of seven, and hopefully we continue to grow. There's always something else emerging and something else to be thinking about and doing when it comes to that employee experience. So yeah.
You've been here, what, a couple of years now?
2 years come September.
Tell us the story about how it all came about.
So it was interesting. Yeah, I mean, again, as a lot of people will probably say, wasn't actively looking to move roles. I'd previously worked with the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service. I'd joined them incredibly 1 week before the pandemic lockdown. And it was just an approach from an agency to say, would you be interested in... And when you get that approach that says, would you be interested in the role of Director of People working for the St Andrews Links Trust, you kind of go, what? There's something a wee bit surreal about that type of job and role actually existing in the first place. And this is the first director of people that the Trust has had. But when you look at that in terms of what you do for a living, what I've been doing for a living for the last 20 plus years, and then bringing that together with pretty much your favourite pastime and hobby since the age of kind of four or five, it just kind of collided. And albeit I'm based in, I live in Glasgow, the kind of 1 hour, 40 minute daily commute wasn't something that I didn't think I could overcome to come and experience and see what the job and the role involves. So yeah, come 2 years September, I've been here, and a lot to do, a lot that we've been doing, and certainly developing the kind of the people function, our profile, our contribution, what it is we can bring and offer to the organisation, has been very much the initial kind of building blocks, and now we're certainly more in a better strategic space in terms of what it is we do and the activity that we lead on that can ultimately affect, you know, through our employees and through our teams, can ultimately affect just how successful the organisation can be. So it's been a quick 2 years. We've achieved a lot so far, but there's quite a bit we can still do.
Mm. To what extent would you say your golf knowledge, interest has helped either you get the job or then actually being good at the job?
So it's interesting. It's a great question. I think it helps, but what we're quite keen here to promote is that you don't have to play golf to work here and have a fantastic contribution. It definitely helps. It definitely helps if you have an appreciation of what the game is and the history of it and what this place means, but you don't have to be a golfer to be part of the team. What we do know is around about kind of 60, 65, 70% of our team does play, and that is obviously a huge attraction when your job is in the most famous golfing location in the world, and you come in every day to do what it is that you do as part of what is a really broad and dynamic operation that we've got here. But I think it definitely helps. And what we've looked to do, especially in the last couple of years, is where staff maybe don't play golf, we know there's an interest there. So one of the things that we look to try and develop is through some staff coaching and staff golf opportunities, get people picking up a club for the first time, whether it's over at our academy or whether it's in a putting green or the short game area, or indeed even going out to one of our courses. We actively encourage people to try it. But there's not a requirement for you to play. But in my regard, I think, you know, from them, as I say, kind of picking up a club at the age of kind of 3 or 4 and quite a few decades on coming to work here, yeah, it's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. And it definitely helps in terms of me understanding the nature of the business and what it is we do and where the people team can affect and influence that and make a really valued contribution. So yeah, I would say it certainly helps me.
And I guess as well, right, you know, you talk about diversity, inclusion, for example, in the context of this environment or any really, like, you know, it's diversity of thought is a thing as well. So probably you want a balance of people who have strong golf background or knowledge versus people coming in at it with a fresh pair of eyes and ideas, right? I'm going to build on this a wee bit, because I wonder if, you know, again, because working in HR as you do, and you'll have an involvement either directly or through your team in recruitment, for instance, and who gets hired into this organisation. Like, do you ever see, because in the context, Scott, of how golf has, you know, it's historically, it's got a bit of a reputation to, you know, it can be seen as elitist, snobby, whatever. And I wonder how that then maybe plays out in the job market in relation to someone will see a golf club or somewhere like this advertising opportunities, but may rule themselves out on the basis that, oh, I can't see myself fitting in there, kind of thing. Do you almost have to, because you, from what you've just said, that is the opposite. So you don't see it that way at all. You're very inclusive, but do you almost have to reassure or talk people that are kind of on the fence a wee bit?
I think we have to recognize that golf is a predominantly male sport, and I think that our workforce kind of split is kind of 2/3 male, 1/3 female, for example. It's no different from the challenge that we had in the fire service, which was, I think, in around 97% male and 3% female, and trying to make sure that balance was redressed, not with the ambition to ever make it 50-50, because that's probably too far apart, but to make sure that we spoke to all different groups within society, and that, exactly as you said there, Chris, which is a really important point for me, people could see themselves fitting. And I think that's what we want to do in terms of making sure that we appeal to everybody, and we can speak and connect to the passive job hunter or the active job hunter that says, yeah, I can see myself working there. I might not play golf, or it might not be my thing, or that golf reputation of kind of being stuffy and exclusive and whatnot, I can still see myself working in that area, working in that industry. And I think that's really important. Similar when I was with NHS, it was a similar challenge with nursing and the kind of male-female change there. So the whole inclusion piece, which goes beyond male-female, is really important to us, because if we don't, and we aren't, like any other organisation, if we can't connect with the broadest possible kind of groups within society, we're really narrowing our wedge of talent pools and being able to attract a broad, diverse range of talent, because the way the workplace is changing, you're constantly looking for that diversity in your talent, sorry. And if we can't get that because we aren't speaking to those audiences, then we're really missing out, and we're trying to do stuff probably with an arm tied behind our back. Mm-hmm, so really important for us from an inclusion perspective that we're able to, yeah, we're able to speak to those audiences, but people see themselves as, that's a place I could fit, that's a place I could go and enjoy and fulfil my career ambitions, have a good time, have fun. And that's really important, because really important is that we start to shift that dial. And even if the percentages of the workforce stay the same, at least we can be confident that we're still speaking to those audiences. And I think that's one of our key objectives is that we have a confidence that we are relating to those audiences, whether they choose to come. We're in competition with all other sectors and industries as everybody else is, but we just want to have that confidence that we're speaking in the right way and connecting with those different talent pools that are out there.
Yeah, because, you know, in preparation for us meeting today, we've had a couple of conversations, and one thing that I find very fascinating, which I'm convinced the listener will as well, was this idea of, in the golf industry, there are relatively few, globally, there are few places like this that have the reputation, the opportunity to influence change, if you like, right? So I guess almost in that context then, there is, from what I've read and heard things you talk about, that there is a St. Andrew's experience, a customer experience. Can you say a bit more about that? I mean, what does that actually look like? To what is St. Andrew's trying to be to all the different people that it's trying to attract?
Yeah, I mean, as in what you were saying, I mean, I think first I would say we are very much aware of our standing and responsibility within the world of golf, for example, and yeah. a lot of what we do within, you know, even from our social media channels and whatnot, we get a lot of people looking to engage and have eyes on what the trust is doing and where it's going and what it's developing or working on. So we're very aware of where we fit within that and our responsibility aligned to maybe a Wimbledon with tennis or whatever it might be. So, you know, from a golf perspective, we were very much focused on that. I think from a St. Andrew's experience, and certainly coming from the West Coast, there's something that you can't replicate, and it might be everything to do with golf or something to do with golf, but when people come here, you've got grown men standing in the first tee in tears because that emotional experience of just being where the greats of the game have been before. You've got people likes of greats of the game, like Jack Nicklaus, saying your career isn't complete unless you've won an Open. It's St. Andrew, and you see it and you feel that from a golfing sense within the town, as is the university's a big presence as well in the history there. So there is something truly unique about the town, and it's very difficult to describe it, even harder to bottle it in terms of what that looked like. But when you're here, you do experience it. And I can remember, I think I'd shared with you before, maybe day two or three, as I'm walking down by the 17th hole of the old course en route for a sandwich in town, and just kind of taking in that I'm now part of the team that's responsible for looking after that heritage, that legacy, that renown that the town has. And it's really important that we continue to provide that unique and memorable experience for everybody that comes and has a touch point with us here at the Links Trust. And those touch points aren't always just picking up a golf club and playing the old course. Those touch points could be within one of our F&B outlets. It could be within one of our retail stores. It could even be coming to the academy and having a lesson and your first experience. So whatever that touch point is, making sure that experience is a unique and a memorable one is right up there. And it's difficult to explain when you walk around, as I would describe it, the kind of the home end and that amphitheatre. And when you think through the history of it and where golf began and how it's developed and even how this site's developed over those hundreds of years, we say the place has been here for 600 years. We certainly hope it's going to be here for another 600 years. So it's got a lot of stories. A lot of things have happened here, and I think even more so in maybe the last 15, 20 years. Certainly golf and the industry has kind of exploded in many ways in terms of whether it's global travel, equipment and facilities and resorts and the like. So we're very conscious that, you know, from a St. Andrew's perspective, we want to make sure that experience that people have when they come here is right up there with the very best.
Yeah. Well, you know, for example, we'll, in a moment, we'll move maybe into talking about the whole estate, the whole prop, you know, because there's six courses here. You have, I mean, Scott, remind me to, for the listeners and for Instagram, whatever, I mean, the view that you've got from this office is, I mean, again, your job's cool, your view's even cooler, but, you know, there's something, you know, for example, the AIG Women's Open is going to be on here in a couple of weeks. You can see out your window now, all the grandstands going up and everything. Remind me to ask you about that in a minute, because that feels quite topical as well. But it's interesting you mentioned the likes of Wimbledon, right? Because that came to mind for me, having been to Wimbledon, for instance. You know, it's one of these great kind of British institutions, sporting events. And for instance, my wife and I, quite a number of years ago, did that. So I think to this day, they still retain about 500 tickets per day up until the middle weekend for people that camp out in the nights before to get, and they're the best seats in the house, right? They're like, or front row on center court or whatever, right? But it's the experience that goes with doing that, which that the whole thing is like mystical and captivating. And I relate that whole queuing up, camping to get those, that golden ticket, to the ballot thing here for the old course, for example. And what I, having never played, well, you asked me coming in here, have you ever played here? I've never played on any of the courses in this estate. I know a number of people that have played the old course. And this theme that comes out is much less about the course architecture or how brilliant the course itself is per se. I mean, there's some of that, but it's the experience. Yeah. It's the whole, what it means to have played there and the history. And like you say, when you talk about other people. So I guess let's use that then as the segue into, on the balcony, you told me a whole bunch of really interesting stuff about this place. So just give the listener a bit of a kind of a potted history or like some cool, interesting trivia about this place that a lot of people just won't know.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of this, yeah, the view's okay. Well, it's better than okay in terms of that. I'm fortunate enough to kind of look out over the back to heading back towards Garbridge, if you like, and within that space we've got six courses. Our seventh course, the castle, which is up the not connected to the site here in the town, but up towards the, as you head out of town, and one of our, that's our youngest course. But for any listener that's played that, they'll appreciate it. It's a bit of a golfing challenge and test, certainly when the wind is up and there's maybe a bit of rain in the air. It's very much a challenge and a test of your golfing capabilities. But out here with the six courses, ranging, as you, everybody will appreciate, the original kind of from the old course and new course and Jubilee and where the site's expanded over the years is obviously the addition of the Eden course, the Stratirim course and the Balgove, and it's really catering to the full range of abilities within golf and making that as accessible as it can be. As I say, you come in the office in the morning, traditionally you've seen the Balgove by maybe 10, 11 o'clock, especially in the summer. Lots of families playing and kids, some kids that are smaller than their golf clubs that they're holding, actually picking up a club and having a game, and that's awesome. When you see that in your terms of think about people who are interested in picking up the game, it takes me back to first time I picked up a club that was kind of sawn off half its length, and you think they're really cool moments and memories that families are creating. I would say from a lot of, you know, golf enthusiasts and people, you don't really forget a lot of your firsts, whether it's your first birdie or the first course you played or whatnot, and that's experiences to see, you know, maybe first time I hit a golf ball was on the turf at St Andrews. That's pretty cool in itself. And right through to myself, when I kind of joined, as I say, nearly a couple of years ago now, you don't forget the first time you struck a ball off the turf here as well, which it was a lot. Played the new course once prior to joining. I hadn't played a lot of the links courses, but there's just something different about it. And with the six courses that we've got, as I say, catering for a full range of golfing capabilities, but a full range of experiences as well. And everybody's got their preference. There's a mystique and renown of the old course that, again, I think I was saying to you earlier, you'll never forget your first tee shot at the first hole. And similarly, probably a lot of people want to forget their approach shot at the 18th when you're coming into that amphitheatre and you've got, oh, I say 50 to 100 people who are in town watching you. So it creates that drama and that effect for everybody. But across the courses, everybody will have their favourite, and that's kind of, you know, choice that we offer. So the fact that we've got that range of courses, as I was showing you earlier, from corner to corner, there's six courses within that space, is something quite incredible. But, you know, even back in the day, the original days, there was the railway line that ran through the courses, which obviously isn't here, and what is now the Jigger Inn at the 17th hole, which was a station's master's house, is now a pub, bar, call it what you want, attached onto the old course hotel. And that now itself is actually an attraction that creates a lot of memories and moments when you're playing the 17th, because you've got people outside watching and getting engaged, as you do when you go up the 18th hole with some of the hotels and the likes. You get some interaction with the public. So yeah, the whole history of it and heritage of it, as I said earlier, is really important to us. But again, we're also keen to build and progress and develop those experiences so that when you come back next time, there's maybe something different. Anything from a different pin position to a different experience, and maybe our F&B outlet or a different on-course experience with stuff that we've just brought in, like sort of a in an on-course kind of juice bar and things like that. So we're always looking to develop the experience for people. But we are very lucky that we've got, in the town side, we've got the six courses and the castle course up the hill, so to speak. So lucky that we can do that. Lucky that we've got, there is only one home of golf. So we're in a really advantageous position to use that and as a way of promoting what it is we can offer. So we aren't short of people wanting to come. And experience it, and what we want to make sure is that we utilise everything that we've got out there in the best way that we can. Whether you get to play the old course, which that's clearly the busiest course because it's in demand, or whether you play one of the other courses, there's a lot of good experience to be had there. What we do know, interestingly, and I don't know if I shared this with you earlier, is that when we close the old course, for example, when an open comes and it's maybe closed for 4 or 5 weeks, or back in the day we'd maybe close it kind of at different times of year for course maintenance, it affects other courses in and around Scotland in terms of, because in terms of the golf industry, when we close the old course, when we've got people coming on their bucket list golf trip, go play Tunbury, Carnoustie, Glen Eagles, all these fantastic other resorts there, if the old course isn't open, they'll wait to come for when the old course, because they want to play all those other courses, but they want also to play the old course too. So we know, again, coming back to that responsibility that we've got being the home of golf and being really conscious about how we use that and how we promote it. So a lot goes on, as I say, out there with the courses that we've got, a lot of activity in daylight obviously dark times in the light. People will play for as long as they can see, so the courses are busy, and that's got to be a good thing because we've got people involved, we've got people engaged and people playing. So
yeah, for sure, absolutely. And we've got a round to look forward to after this at the evening course,
and it might even stay dry for us, would be something.
It's looking good so far. The Women's Open, the AIG Women's Open then, like, give us a sense of where do you and your team come into that? Do you guys have any involvement in actually tournaments or sort of?
So not so much so with the Women's Open, similar to the Gents Open, we're the host. So it's an RNA tournament, it's an RNA competition. So they effectively come in and take over the site and we hand the site over to them. But obviously, from a local perspective, there's still the opportunity to play golf or to engage in different touch points, because although the Open's on the old course, there's still other things going on in and around the site and in and around the town. So we aren't so much involved in that, but if we have our own competitions, in terms of this year we'll be for the second time have our university collegiate event. There's other tournaments in terms of the amateur tournament going on at the castle this week at the moment. So there's big competitions that our golf events team will arrange and host, but something like the Women's Open and then any other Open, the Dunhill comes back again, is very much we're the host of the tournament. It's not our tournament, if that makes sense.
No, of course. Yeah, absolutely. Good. I think for what's left of our conversation, we should dial this in more to Scott Semple, the golfer. Where do you play your golf?
So I'm up at, back through in Glasgow, member of Cathcambrays Golf Club. I've been there, goodness, since age of 11, so without giving my age away, that's 35 plus years. So great. Yeah, I've been golfing from a very, very young age. And I started golfing before that at the regular family holidays as a kid to Girvan, which is where I first picked up a club and was able to kind of get the bug, so to speak. But yeah, for the last, goodness, 35, 36 years, whatever it might be, been playing up at Cathcam.
Do you credit any one person influence in your life for getting you into golf?
Yeah, well, there's a couple. I mean, my papa gave me my first golf bag, which was his, which I wish I'd kept. It would have been worth a fortune now because it would have been an antique. But, you know, he was a keen golfer when he was growing up and used to, you know, tell an awful lot of stories of where he played a lot of his golf at Blair Beth, which is close to where Cathcambrays is. But in those days, public transport, cars and whatnot, he would just always tell us a story where he would actually walk the best part of a round and a half to then go and play around the golf to then walk back home again with clubs and kit and whatnot. So he was a really keen golfer in his day. And then obviously as I grew up, my dad played the game and we kind of played together. I joined Cathcam first, and then my dad joined the year after. So yeah, I got a lot of kind of the history in the family in terms of who was interested and keen on golf. But it's like everything else, as you grow up, then in comes football, in comes rugby, in comes other sports. But 35 years on, I'm not playing football, I'm not playing rugby anymore, I'm still playing golf. But certainly in the early days, my papa was a big influence and used to play an awful lot of golf with my dad.
Have you got any sort of one really sort of abiding memory, a nostalgic memory that you can think without of?
Without
a story?
Doubt, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, coming back to Girvan, you see, don't forget, my first birdie was in the fifth hole, par three, Girvan, and my dad and papa were both there, and memorable in the fact that I think it was a 30-foot putt that I hold that was going 30 foot by, but I managed to grab and go in, and that was your bug. And then from there, a couple of years later, it's, I think Girvan's maybe a par 62 or something like that, 63 maybe. Short course, but it's the first place I broke 70 as well. So you remember these things and these experiences. But yeah, I could take you back to the green and the place where the putt was from, because it was as far away from the, or as close, as I say, to the edge of the green on the right-hand side as possible. So yeah, you don't forget that stuff.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's really, really good.
And it also cost my dad a fiver as well. So I think that was maybe one of the most memorable parts as well.
Love it. I mean, because something maybe worth talking about here now is, because again, in the conversations we've had beforehand, I can tell it's kind of struck a chord with you, Scott, or it's kind of piqued a curiosity, this notion of well-being and golf being good for you, right? So I guess, like, your own personal perspective on that, or your own experience with this idea of golf being good for you, I mean...
So it's an interesting, since we started, since we connected, it's probably made me think a wee bit more about something that you maybe take for granted and don't think through. But what I've taken from the game in the years that I've been playing it, it's actually something quite incredible. From playing at a pretty decent standard, a pretty competitive standard, to playing socially, to keeping in touch with people who you meet throughout your career, and the common meeting place is, you know, 18 holes in a golf course somewhere in Scotland and beyond, to going on golf trips and meeting new people, to also just sometimes being out in those kind of twilight nights on your own, just enjoying the peace and quiet and the conversation that you have with yourself. So golf's given me an awful lot, and I think probably, as I say, just reflecting on some of the chats we've had, I probably never actually appreciated just what that is. And that's everything from experience to opportunity, because a lot of conversations and whatnot happen on golf courses, as they do, but it gives you a common interest when you're meeting someone new, and just as you've asked, where is it you play? That kind of connects people, and it really has been something quite incredible, because, again, through my golf club, what that's afforded me in terms of playing, as I say, playing on other courses, playing when you play with a team or whatever, you get different experiences at the time, at the age of kind of 14, 15, 16, you're not actually taking all that in, and where you then go and what you do in your 20s and your 30s. It's probably the age I'm at now. You probably look back and you reflect a wee bit more and take it in, and I think just how cool some of those experiences and opportunities were. But yeah, it's given me a lot. It's given me a lot, and it's probably only in the last kind of 6 months or so, as we've been talking, I thought, that's actually, you forget more than you remember.
Yeah,
put it that way.
I suppose it's one of these things where actually, like you say, the taking it for granted is probably the right way of phrasing it. And it's not until someone actually puts you on the spot in a way and makes you think about it and go, oh, do you know what, actually, you know, there's so much unique about golf, really. And I think it's many of those things you just described. So maybe one of the last things I'll ask you, you know, is there anything about golf or in golf that you see in the game itself that kind of irks you at all, or makes you go, I'd much rather that we did this a different way, or I'd like to see us move away from that tradition or rule or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably going back to even my own golf club, you know, the golf clubs are having to react and change. The traditions that were there in the 80s and the 90s, and whether that's the clothes that you wear or the clubs that you use or the facilities that you've got, they definitely have to move on from, as I would call it, the Pringle wearing days, where we all turned up in 80 degree heat wearing a lamb's wool jumper and that. And if you even look at how the game's moved on and progressed, and trying to protect the future, you know, a lot of the work that the R&A are doing, their neighbours just down the road, is very much about trying to grow the game and get more people involved, and could be playing it in different ways. So like, so the golf facility that you've got in Glasgow is trying to make things fun. But if you look at my two kids, the way they get curious and interested about things now is different from the way I did it. So, you know, how can you gamify golf and do things that...
How old are your kids?
So they are, son Matthew is 18 and Abigail's 16. They're not sporty in too many ways. They've not really taken up the...
So any interest in golf at all?
No, not particularly. We've tried a couple of times, but yeah, they're probably more of the drama and the arts and whatnot. But yeah, in terms of they know what I do and they know how much I enjoy. But we'll go to the golf range occasionally and hit a ball, but not definitely not engaged in the same way I am. Definitely not.
No, but it's interesting, you know. Sorry to interrupt you around that whole, because you know what you were saying about how they and their generation react to things, take an interest in things, and engage in things. How you seen that? What's the difference then?
When you look at where I'm up in Glasgow, we've got the Top Golf facility now, which is kind of gamified it in the sense that people of all levels, capabilities and whatnot can again pick up a golf club and try it. If you go over to our academy here in St Andrews, again we've got the Top Tracer system in place where you can practice, you can play games, and that's very much about, you know, somebody said to me once, I talked a lot about the importance of practice and to develop and hone your skills. They said, what does that involve? I said, well, I mean hitting balls. I said, so you basically stand in a field and hit balls. And when I thought about it, I went, yeah, that is kind of what I do. And then when you then reflect back, you go, me saying to, I think it might even be Matthew that said it, I'm okay, Dad, I'm not bothered with that, because you have to have a certain kind of mindset that you want to go do that in practice. And if you just want to play for fun, and I think that's what I've definitely seen from a golfing perspective, is trying to be a wee bit more diverse about how you can move away from, you know, golf clubs being quite restrictive in terms of how you get into them, but also what those facilities are like and opportunities definitely for juniors and whatnot. When I first joined Cathkin, I think the age limit was maybe 11, 12. We're now looking at memberships for kids as young as 5 and wanting to kind of bring that through and kind of break through some of those traditional learned habits or routines that make it difficult for people to play. So I think that, back to your question about things we do differently, I think it's just that evolution of the game. And maybe without sounding controversial, it's like hoodies on the golf course seem to be okay now, whereas they weren't 10 years ago. But you've got the pros wearing, you know, golf and apparel that's, goodness, 100 times different from the stuff I was wearing growing up. And I think that's part of the game, trying to develop itself and make it appealing in different ways.
Yeah, definitely. Golf is in a very interesting space at the moment. It's evolving and progressing. Yeah. So, Scott, I think we can probably round it there and go in and enjoy ourselves a nice lunch and look forward to
hit some shots.
Hit some shots. Hit some balls into a field, as Matthew would say.
How many shots are you giving me?
That's a conversation for off air. We'll let the listener know how that worked out. I think Scott's going to be a wee bit disappointed when he finds out. What do you play off?
Well, it's 4.5, whatever that handicap is. I think out there it'll be something.
Yeah. We'll definitely stop. Shall I stop? No. So what's my WHS at the moment? It's like about 20.7 or something like that. So
no shots then.
Well, just play off scratch and see how it goes.
Let's try that. I like the sound of that.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's episode and feel inspired to go out there and continue to golf yourself healthy. Remember, if you enjoyed the episode, please be sure to follow the show on your preferred podcast platform and maybe also leave us a 5-star review wherever you feel it's merited. Also, you can head over to golfyourselfhealthy.com, where by filling in your contact details in the contact tab, you can sign up for future newsletters and updates. Until the next time, remember to always embrace the rough and forever cherish the fairway.